7:15, it's time for Wine Chat. The island of Sicily has long and complex history, being conquered by the Greeks, Normans, and Arabs in different eras. In modern times, it exists as Italy's second largest wine region and is revisiting its rich viticultural history to work with indigenous grape varieties paired with modern winemaking. We are joined in the studio by Callie to continue our tour of Italy and take a look at one of the most dynamic wine regions in Sicily. Cal, welcome back to the show. How are you?
Hey, it's a pleasure to be here.
So, Sicily, let's talk about it. What's its history? What's going on?
Yeah, so Sicily actually has a really interesting sort of history, because we sort of know that there was viticulture there from around the 8th century BCE, started by the Greeks. You know, it being an island that's fairly volcanic, it's incredibly fertile, really good for growing crops and all that stuff. And we can actually, we sort of have some notion that viticulture spread from there onto mainland Italy.
Sure.
So it's, you know, the older history than like Italy proper, I guess. And also we sort of see some of the first examples of wine being produced for export coming out of Sicily. Like there's sort of like shipwrecks from the 5th century BCE where they sort of find stamped amphora that are sort of marked as like, they were producing enough wine that this could become an export good to be sent around the rest of the Mediterranean. And that's sort of like a important cultural milestone for wine. We sort of fast forward through, you know, a bunch of like the medieval era, where a lot of that production sort of got halted and replaced with wheat because staple grains are more important. And sort of like, let's move into what I'd call sort of the modern era. And Sicily definitely got wrapped up in a lot of what I would call the very heavy-handed agricultural support that the European Union was doing early on. Wine there was mainly for bulk wine. And when we talk about bulk wine, I think a lot of times people think of sort of like goon bags and clean skins. This is sort of, to use the technical term.
Yeah. Is it the sommelier accepted?
Yeah. But sort of this is sort of the next level of production beyond that. So it's a lot of stuff that was then being like brought down to be grape concentrate, a lot of stuff that was marked for distillation, a lot of stuff that would then just go on to be blended into cheaper wines from other countries, because it was cheaper to buy concentrated like grape juice or concentrated wines from Sicily than it was to actually grow your own grapes and make the wine yourself. As you can imagine, this wasn't sort of great in terms of reputation for their wine industry. But then in sort of late 80s, early 90s, also mid 80s, I would probably say, we start to see the whole like New World wine boom happen. And then production there has this really quick shift where it starts to move to being a lot of international varietals. So we start to see a lot of Chardonnay being made there. We start to see a lot of Shiraz, Grenache, Cabernet being made there, and very much being made in styles to fit like modern consumer palates and being designed for export. So they sort of lose, they've moved into a more expensive wine space, but really have lost any sort of sense of like terroir or authenticity to it. And then we sort of move a little bit further forward than that, and sort of as, and you see this with wine regions across the world constantly. I was reading a great case study about how this happened in the Argentine, but you hit a point where production is good in terms of quantity, but isn't great in terms of quality. And there's a real challenge, which is like, how do you shift your industry out of being a place that is producing very cheap, very large volumes to producing more expensive, smaller volumes? And this has sort of been the general trend for the last 20, 30 years that we see in Sicily, where they've sort of been re-embracing some of their indigenous varietals, a greater focus on some of the DOC and IGT sort of protected regions within Sicily, and sort of focusing more on making wines that are truly Sicilian, because it has so much unique culture when it comes to like food and history and all that stuff. Sort of focusing back down on that, and it sort of comes hand in hand with this sort of slightly more not nationalistic, but like this sort of a slight patriotism to it all as well, as they're sort of, people are now backing their own history and their own you know, winemaking styles.
Yeah. So what are the major grapes in Sicily, and sort of where does Mount Etna and the uniqueness that brings sort of play into it?
Yeah, totally. There's a lot of very unique varietals that are grown in all across Sicily. It is quite like a large landmass, you know, relatively speaking. But we the sort of the main player in Reds is Nero D'Avola, which will sort of I guess that's probably the most relevant for our Australian context. It's probably the one that sort of has the most play here domestically. But in terms of Whites, they've sort of got Catarato, Inzolia, Grillo, and a lot of these are usually made in sort of like fresh, slightly saline styles. You've got a whole bunch of different Reds, and I'm not going to just go through and name all these great varietals, but sort of
Please spend 15 minutes
just mispronouncing
just
Italian grape
names. Rattle them all off.
Yeah.
Go for it.
But I guess the interesting thing about Sicily specifically is that a lot of the grapes that are indigenous to there aren't found anywhere else in the world. There is still some like Shiraz and Chardonnay and Grenache being produced there, but they're increasingly in sort of smaller volumes as this refocusing on the indigenous varietals. And then I guess, yeah, the elephant in the room, as it were, Mount Etna.
The volcano on the horizon.
Yeah, exactly. Which is, I think, the largest mountain in Italy. It might be the largest volcano in Italy. That might be its claim to fame. But obviously, volcanoes, really, really interesting because they are one of the few things in the world that can make new soil. Because whenever a volcano erupts, it, you know, lava flows down. I mean, we've all seen Dante's Inferno, you know.
I'm familiar with the
Dante's Peak, rather. Yeah, yeah.
We've all seen it, yeah. I mean, we've all gone through the night, the layers.
Layers. Yeah, you put the vinegar in the bicarb soda, it goes up over the top.
What if each layer of Dante's Inferno hell had a wine?
That's a different episode.
We'll get lost in that.
But because of that, you get sort of like two really unique things playing. You get really great altitude because it's a very tall mountain. And you get really, really great fertility because mountains tend to have really poor soil fertility because basically they've been around for a long time. A lot of the like micronutrients in the soils have been washed away because they've got steep slopes. And so they tend to be really harsh growing conditions. Whereas, you know, Etna has this like really, really great high quality soil, has this beautiful aspect. You can sort of grow stuff. I mean, there's vineyards above the snow line there, which weirdly enough they get knocked out of because the Etna DOC only goes up to the snow line. There's vineyards beyond it,
right?
And they don't get to call their wines Etna because they're too high up. Because like when they wrote the rules, they didn't account for the fact that might ever happen.
You're too much on Mount Etna.
You're too Etna.
This is extra Etna wine.
Yeah. But we see basically two main wines coming out of here. We see Etna Bianco, which is made out of, it's Caracante, I believe is the grape varietal. Oh, I hope I didn't get that wrong. Etna Rosso, which are mainly made out of Nerello Cappuccio and Nerello Mascalese. We don't really see these grapes in very many other spots, but Etna really has come into this like spotlight as being the premier wine region, not just of Sicily, but I'd say of most of southern Italy.
Mm.
I'd say very few places are competing with them in terms of prestige and quality at the moment. And I think the other thing is, you know, as a region that is transforming out of that bulk wine production, and, you know, like this transformations take time, you know, but I still represent an incredibly high quality wines for very, very compelling price points. Mm. And yeah, I guess that's my little Etna rant.
Yeah. And so where in Australia is growing these varietals?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Varieties. It's fine. We'll get there one day.
They're going to get me now.
Yeah. The wine cops are coming. Yeah. Like I said, the major player in Australia is Nero D'Avola, which was sort of brought over via sort of the Chalmers, Chalmers Vineyards, and that sort of that project of sort of introducing alternate varietals. And I think the first commercial cropping of that was about 2000, might be 2001. And since then, and this is an interesting thing, right? Whereas I feel like a lot of the Italian varieties we talked about before have been planted usually in areas settled by Italian immigrants. Because Nero came to the party so late, it actually has quite a different story where you sort of find plantings all across South Australia, like from north to the Clare, like all the way south to sort of the limestone coast there. We see plantings in places like Heathcote in Victoria. We see plantings all over the central ranges. And I think there's even a little bit of it being grown up in the Hunter these days. But it's a really fun varietal. And the big thing that Nero does really well that is great for an Australian climate is that it doesn't lose sugar and become overly ripe from hanging on the vines in heat longer. And, you know, like I said, I've been pointing this out every time. Like, you know, when we were talking about the further northern grapes, a lot of the stuff is they take a lot of sunlight, but they're not as great with heat because they're further north. But when we talk about the southern grapes, the big thing is they're very, very drought resistant and they're really able to deal with heat quite well. So much so that a lot of the modern viticulture on Nero is basically intentionally putting it through water stress at specific times, so that it minimizes how much fruit it yields, because otherwise it yields too much fruit to actually be like practical to harvest. So, you know, but it's, I think it's a really fun varietal. I think a lot of people are doing some really interesting work in that space. And I think there's sort of a lot of things to love about it as a varietal, especially as it's becoming more and more of, I would call a center stage. Like, there's sort of alternate varietals that are weird, obscure things that no one ever talks about. And then there's stuff like Nero and Fiano, which I think would say are making pretty significant inroads into the Australian wine lexicon. Yeah.
And how has it been getting... So I think we've sort of touched on a little bit that some areas of specifically, especially in France and Italy, are very protective of their of their wine varietals. What's the vibe like in Sicily?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't been to Sicily, so I can't say for sure. But yeah, my understanding is that like it is still a very agriculturally focused area. You know, you're not getting the sort of like Burgundy effect where the winemaker is rocking up in a Maserati to go like make wine for the day kind of thing. You know. And once again, a lot of this is this sort of more viticulture forward, people growing grapes forward kind of style of the industry, as opposed to, and I feel like this is maybe, not to slag off the French, but this is maybe a bit more of a French way of looking at it, where it's like there's a lot of winemakers in France who don't really have any involvement in the grape growing side of the business. Whereas my sense, from what I've sort of read about Sicily, is that like because it is more agriculturally focused, there's a lot of grape growers and there's very few, comparatively, there's a lot fewer people who are actually making like wine at commercial scale there now. And as such, it is this more sort of agrarian focused, you know. And I think part of it is also like, it's a good spot to grow things, you know. You've got a lot of coastal influences there, which really help minimize your disease pressure, you know. Because you're on an island, you can sort of position yourself very nicely to have whatever aspects you want. And I think there's another really interesting thing where you find a lot of the wines in the southeast corner of Sicily are quite different in terms of style and methodology compared to the stuff that you find on the southwest corner as compared to the northeast corner, because the northeast has a lot more direct connection to Italy. But also the southwest is functionally a lot closer to places like Tunisia and as such has a lot more sort of cultural exchange with parts of North Africa in ways that I think are sometimes hard to comprehend with the way that we sort of talk about the Western winemaking world.
So there's no like... organization with a controlling interest in the wine export and import of
I cannot comment on matters before the court. No, and it's look, there definitely probably is.
Yeah.
But like I don't talk about that stuff because I don't know enough to know when it like
you just talk about the grapes.
Yeah, you know, and like did I watch The Godfather 2 and fall asleep halfway through it? Yes, I did. But you know, like I don't know, like, yeah, I'm sure there is.
It's all above board.
It's all above board, yeah. There's never been anything dodgy in any Italian winemaking region.
We're just talking about the grapes.
We're just talking about the grapes, you know, I'm here to spread love.
Yeah. And so, speaking of the grapes, what are you drinking this week?
Yeah, I actually did go to a really fun little Italian wine tasting on Monday night, which there was a bunch of Sicilian wines. So, you know, that's definitely up there. But I think what I'm going to focus on instead... is going to be, I'm trying to think which Nero I want to shout out. There's a lot. let's go for the Minim Nero Diavola. Pretty sure they're getting that one in from Heathcote. Minim's a really small Victorian-based wine production, like, you know, pretty low-fi, but And I say this of a lot of winemakers who I've sort of been following over the last 5-6 years, but the quality of their wines has really jumped from being stuff that is quite, you know, a little risque in terms of faults at times, but like is very fun and fruit forward, into being more and more these wines that I would say are quite well structured and quite well considered. And I think this Nero, especially in the latest iteration, I think shows a really great concentration and power to it, in a way in which sometimes I think these wines are assumed just to be like big fruit bombs and kind of party juice stuff. Whereas I think they've really stepped up to that next level of winemaking and sort of started to do stuff that's really quite considered, and it's starting to show some real structure and elegance to it.
Good stuff. Well, that's Sicily. We've done Sicily.
Yeah.
Next we're going to take one more jump south. Not quite immediately. Yeah. We're doing like a bit of an epilogue.
Yeah, we're doing a bonus round.
Yeah.
You know, and we're going to be talking about Maltese wines.
Yeah. The even smaller island underneath Sicily.
Yeah, yeah.
You blink and you miss it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and maybe we'll even talk about Maltese falcons. Who knows?
You never know.
Yeah, that's the one Maltese joke I've got. Well, you know. Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
It'll come back next week. It'll be as good as my Anthony LaPuglia.
Yeah. Who knows? We might even reach those dizzying heights again, you know.
You never know where we'll end up next week.
Yeah.
Well, we know we'll end up in Malta, but we're in Malta.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, it's not too difficult to know where you'll end up with Malta. So, you know, take one step that way, one step the other way. Yeah. I'm allowed to say this because I'm Maltese.
There you go. You learn something new every day, folks.
I learn something new every day. You wouldn't know it, but you... but I am. You're looking at me. You wouldn't know it. Anyway, great to have you on, Cal.
Absolutely, we'll pleasure to be here.
See you next week, and have a good weekend.
Thank you.